It's Sunday, the 12th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Drew Holiday. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Fantrax and Rhubarb Rhino. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like both Fantrax and Rhubarb Rhino are doing, all you need to do is, in the case of Rhubarb Rhino, leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the podcast. Of course, Fantrax sponsoring the show now and through the rest of the season. They've been a great support of the show, and they can be a great support for you and your league as well. If you don't know what Fantrax is the best place where you can host a league, either free or premium model. Their free league is the most customizable league around for any sort of fantasy league, whether it's basketball, which it most likely is, but it might be football with football season coming up. You might want to start a mid-season baseball league. You know what? If you're on ESPN or Yahoo, once they decide that you can't start leagues anymore, you can't. On Fantrax, you can start them at any time. So take your baseball league over. Start a midway, a post-all-star baseball league. Over on Fantrax, start a hockey league, start a college basketball league, start a NASCAR league, start a golf league. You can do all that on Fantrax, along with the tremendous amount of customization they've got. It is the best free product in the business. It is also got a great premium model as well. So there's heaps of stuff over on Fantrax: salaries, contracts, minor league squads, European players, college players on your NBA team. There is so much stuff that you can do over on Fantrax, stuff that I can't even begin to mention, not to mention the forum over there that we're trying to get kickstarted as well. There'll be lots happening there. And of course, Basketball Monster presenting every podcast, as you're well aware. You know, Basketball Monster, there's no basketball playing at the moment, so not much is happening over at Basketball Monster, but you can always use that to research next season. If, for example, you're in the Red Rock 30 team league and we just had our draft slot drawing today, which you would have seen in the video before this one, you can go check out all the past stats of players from this season, last season. Try and start building a draft list. Try and start working out where you want to draft in that first round. Basketball Monster stats are always there. You can always use our tools, and it's a real handy thing to do over the off season as well. For today's podcast, we're doing the Miami Heat season in review. So,
let's get to it.
Michael Bolton seems very Miami. Does he live in Miami? I don't know. He just seems like he'd be very Miami Beach. Maybe less so with the short hair, but I feel like Michael Bolton lives in Miami. I'd like someone to confirm that for me. I know I have connections with Michael, but I don't feel comfortable asking where he lives at this point. If someone can tell me if Michael Bolton lives in Miami, I'd be greatly appreciative. We're looking at the Miami Heat, though. Michael Bolton does not play for them. The Heat had a 48-34 record last season, just like the last three teams that we've done on this season in review series. They don't have any draft picks, though, unlike the other teams, because they're not a big fan of building through the draft. But last season, they got some pretty good results out of the draft, which we'll talk about later on. But one of the few seasons they actually had draft picks and decent draft picks, they managed to really hit home runs with both of their selections. They're not going to do that this year unless they start buying picks. But the Heat are more focused on free agency and trying to attract someone like Kevin Durant to come to South Beach. Pat Riley's always a player in free agency, so that's something they're going to be looking at. They've got their own free agency concerns to deal with, though. Number one is going to be Hassan Whiteside, who they've been paying less than $1 million a season for the last 2 years. And that's because, yes, he was a terrible, terrible basketball player and a pretty piss-poor excuse for a human as well in terms of a teammate in those early seasons in Sacramento. Bounced around Europe, came in and started destroying the NBA. At age 26, he's going to get his first real chance at a big contract, and he is going to get a massive contract. He is going to get max money. He is going to get $20 million plus. For 4 or 5 years, the Heat will be doing everything in their power to lock him up. Whether they can or not remains to be seen. Whether they go short on him and don't offer him a max, then he might bolt. He might be out of there. But he is going to be, aside from Durant, one of the most sought-after free agents on the market. So Hassan Whiteside, they've got to take care of him. They've got to take care of Dwayne Wade as well, who signed a one-year, $20 million deal last season. He's an unrestricted free agent. What will he do? Will he take less in order to attract other players to the team? Will he move on? We heard there was some friction with him and the team last offseason. The deal took quite a bit of time to do. So maybe Dwayne Wade moves on. Maybe Dwayne Wade lands in Cleveland. Who knows? It seems unlikely. You would imagine that Wade will be with Miami for life, but there's always been this little sticking point between Wade and the Heat in terms of getting these contracts done in a timely manner. So that's another one to watch for. Luol Deng is is an unrestricted free agent as well. So three-fifths of their starting lineup is unrestricted free agent. Another one of their starting lineup members, Chris Bosh, we don't even know if he's going to play again at this point. So they've got a fair bit of uncertainty, but they've also got just a stack of other free agents as well, excluding those big names. We've got Udonis Haslem. Yeah, fine. He'll, as long as he wants to keep playing, he'll be playing for the Miami Heat. Amari Stoudemire, who signed that one-year veterans minimum last season, and he provided some critical minutes for them. Whether he comes back or not remains to be seen. Gerald Green at the minimum. Again, the Heat have some sort of ability of signing players who should be able to get more than the minimum to minimum contracts and always seem to be able to pull off some sort of salary cap shenanigans to make everything work. So who knows whether these guys are return or if they just bring other players in at minimum deals and get that to work out. That's always a possibility as well. They've got Joe Johnson, who they signed after he was bought out by the Nets. He's an unrestricted free agent. Darrell Wright, who they signed right at the very end of the season. And many of you may not even know that Darrell Wright is back in the league. He's an unrestricted free agent. And then they've got Bryonte Weber with a non-guaranteed deal. Whatever. And Joshy Richardson, whose deal is non-guaranteed. There is zero chance that Josh Richardson's deal does not get guaranteed. He will absolutely be on this team next year. And Tyler Johnson's a guy they have extremely high hopes for. He's a restricted free agent, so he's going to find himself getting some pretty big offers. Now, the Heat are obviously going to be able to match those, but it might put them a fair way over the cap when they do that. He's a pretty decent player, Johnson, but the Heat do really like him, so I imagine that he'll be back unless something very untoward happens. So a lot of interesting situations for Miami. The only players they've got under contract at the moment, Bosch, Dragic, McRoberts, and Winslow. They're the only players. And then you've got the non-guaranteed Joshy Richardson and the restricted rights to Tyler Johnson. So a lot to really deal with if you're a Miami Heat fan and a Miami Heat team executive, which I'm sure Pat Riley has got this got his earphones in and listen to this podcast as we speak. Let's talk about their fantasy value now and get into one of the surprises of the season, and that is Hassan Whiteside. Last season, he was the 34th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, and even that was seen as a huge surprise. He was 50th in 8 cat leagues last season. But this year, he took it to a completely another level. He was the 7th ranked player in 9 cat leagues. He was the 15th ranked player in 8 cat leagues. Would I take him at pick 7 in a 9 cat league? No chance! No chance at all! That doesn't mean I don't like Hassan Whiteside. I was a bit down on him heading into last season because I just didn't know how he was going to respond after a full season. He had a few brain farts at the end of his first season with the Heat where he threw that elbow into the back of Kelly Olynyk's head and some disagreements between himself and teammates. I wasn't sure of where he was going to land. I think I had him ranked in the 20s maybe, as most people did as a second or third round player. I didn't expect him to be a first round guy. And again, I wouldn't pick him at pick 7. But if you're picking at pick 10, at pick 11 and pick 12, he has to be considered. But you see the difference between 8 and 9 cat for Hassan, where he was 15th in 8 cat and 7th in 9 cat. That's a big turnover difference. And to me, when there's that sort of a difference based just on the turnover category, I tend to look more at 8 cat, even if I'm playing in a 9 cat league. You know my thoughts on that. But in a punting situation, a 9 minus 2 rank, he was 5th. In an 8 minus 2 rank, he was 6th. So if you're willing to punt a category, and that could be any of the categories that he's not the best at, and he doesn't hit threes. He I think I read some ridiculous stat that he had 21 assists over the course of his NBA career. Assists he's poor at. Obviously free throws he is poor-ish at, but we saw that change, and maybe free throws isn't going to be a concern, and maybe it's not going to be a puntable category for Hassan. But he's got some massive strengths, and he's got some pretty decent weaknesses as well. So he really fits a situation where if you're not looking at his overall base of value or his overall 9 cat, every category counts, he becomes better. And when you look at an 8 minus 2 and he ranks that highly, which was, where was it? He ranked 6th, and post All-Star he was 4th. Then I can get behind picking him at the end of the first round because his strengths are just so strong. If he heads to another team, I'd probably drop him down a couple of spots just because of the nature of the Heat culture and the fact that maybe he's still got some of that knucklehead in him and that ability to maybe go off the rails and maybe getting paid really has a is a detriment to his game. That's a concern as well, and that's another reason I just wouldn't pick him as high as he has been picked, or as high as he was ranked, which is, again, in an 8 minus 2, when you rank 6th, that's really bloody high. And there's 5 players who are ahead of him in that spot, and that's because he's got such strength in such categories. But if we have a look at what he did pre and post All-Star break, with his free throws, it's key. He was a 55% shooter pre, 75% post. And he looked really, really good from the free throw line. So that's something that's worth noting. So when you look at Hassan Whiteside's numbers, which I haven't even mentioned yet, he only played 29 minutes a game. He went 14 and 11.7. But he had 0.4 assists, 0.6 steals, and then he had 3.6 blocks. So he's locking down that block category for you. He shot 61% from the field, and that's great. But it is only on 9 attempts, so it's not completely locking it down. It's still pretty good. And he shot 64 on 4.5 attempts from the free throw line. But remember, 75 post All-Star break. So he's not a punt free throw guy anymore, I don't think. Yeah, he definitely is not giving you assists. He's definitely not giving you threes. He's definitely not giving you steals in big bunches, but big rebounds, decent scoring, huge blocks, huge field goal percentage. And then you've got the lowish turnovers as well. So he is a player that I think the end of the first round is fine. Pick 7 is too high. Pick 6 is too high for me. But at 10, 11, I don't hate it, depending on the way you're building your team. But early at the turn is probably perfect. That 12, 13 would be a great spot to get him. Whether he remains or not, who knows? But he is a guy that is able, and a guy that's able to lock down one category for you, which is what he's able to do with shot blocking. It's key. The other thing to watch though with him is the last few months of the season, his shot blocking dropped. Now it dropped to 2.9. That's still awesome, but it's not a complete lockdown of that category. From 3.6 to 2.9, it is a significant. It's a drop worth noting, and that's because in the last couple of months of the season he didn't start. He started after the All-Star break just 3 games. He played 25 off the bench and started 3 after starting 40 of 45 to start the season. He had 94 blocks in those 28 games after the All-Star break, so it's still a pretty decent number, but to start the season he was at 175 blocks in 45 games. So we're talking about 4 blocks a game as opposed to 3 blocks a game. So a bit of a difference there, but what he did do in that second half of the season is his defense actually improved. His block numbers went down, and that was the big narrative with Hassan Whiteside to start the season. Yes, he's blocking a lot of shots, but he's actually a negative defensively, and that was true. But once the season got better, and once he got better, his block numbers dropped, but his actual defense improved. And we look at his on-off numbers for the season, they're about even, a 0.8. And that's because he was negative at the start and a real positive at the end. Now, what he does next season or where he goes, we don't know. If he plays more than 30 minutes a game, then there's a potential those block numbers rise again, although I do think they're probably in for a little bit of a drop, as we saw post-All-Star. But, an extra point and a half, an extra half a rebound, maybe get 0.7 steals, or if that feels unlikely, there's stuff that he can do to improve. Definitely, I just wouldn't be all that massively keen on viewing him as a top 6 or top 7 pick at this juncture. Fair to say that Whiteside had a career season last season. He took his numbers up significantly. He blocked 2.5 shots the year before and went up to 3.6 this season, and that free throw improvement is actually a really massive deal and huge for fantasy owners. Chris Bosh. I don't think that we can speak about Chris Bosh without mentioning the blood clot in the lungs. Obviously, that's it's a concern. There's been numerous conflicting reports coming out about Bosh. We don't expect Bosh to play again. That was one of them. Then the next one is we expect Bosh to play again. Bosh wants to play again. At this point, we literally have no idea whether Chris Bosh is going to play at all. In a dynasty league, acquiring Bosh is a risk, but the risk that you have to absorb to take him means that you should be able to get him at a really cheap price. It all depends on who holds him, how much they're panicking, how much they're concerned, but you might be able to get Chris Bosh for a player outside the top 150 if it's a deeper league, just because there's a chance that he never suits up for your team. So you do really have to you weigh it up. But it is an opportunity. If you've got some pretty big testicles, you can make a bold move and you could come out as a winner, because Bosh was great again this season. And now, like the majority of the Heat starting lineup, which is an odd stat, he had a negative on-off number. He was a negative 2.5. Wade was a negative. Deng was a negative. It's an odd situation, but he was. But for fantasy, he was still solid. He ranked 33 in 9 cat leagues and 45th in 8 cat leagues. He's a better rotisserie player than what he is as a head-to-head guy, just because of his consistency across the board. But in the 53 games he played, Bosch played 34 minutes and averaged 19 points. He hit 1.5 threes and grabbed 7.5 rebounds. Also dished 2.5 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.6 blocks, 47 and 80, shooting 37% from three. These are numbers that are really, really underrated. Yes, he had a slight drop-off in scoring, but overall, his fantasy value was improved over the season before. So some pretty big numbers from Bosch again. And his ability to hit those threes and grab a few more rebounds and just grab a couple more assists, just shoot slightly better percentages, sort of bumped him up this season. We look at the advanced stats, which I should have done for Hassan as well. Now, Whiteside was clearly the best player on this team for win shares. He had a towering win shares per 48 of 2.233, which is massive. He clearly led the team in defensive box score plus minus and was third in overall. He was first, if we don't include the 8 combined games that the Birdman and Briante Weber played. He led the team in box score plus minus. We look at Chris Bosch, who didn't play quite as many games, but he was still second on the team in win shares and finished second on the team in win shares per 48. So obviously a key factor. He's a slight negative defensively, but a real key offensively for this team, and was second in overall box score plus minus. And both of those players, Hassan Whiteside and Chris Bosch, posted a PER of over 20 and above average true shooting percentages. So really, they were the keys for this team. You can talk about Dragic, you can talk about Wade as much as you want, but Bosch and Whiteside were the two players who really got this team going. Again, next season, if Bosch plays, the injury risk is there, so he won't be a player that's picked in the top 50. And it's not an injury, the illness risk maybe is the better way of putting it. He won't be picked in the top 50. I'm pretty confident in saying that. And that means when you're picking him at pick 60 or pick 70 or pick 80, if he does happen to suit up, then it's a massive bargain. And again, now is the time to strike with Dynasty where there's uncertainty. Yes, you are taking on risk, and that's why you really have to be careful about where you're picking him and what you're giving up in order to get him. But it could pay off massive, and it could burn you, no doubt. But if they're panicking, and there's every right, because I'd say it's 50-50 at this, well, actually, I'd probably say it's 40-60 as to whether Bosch comes back or doesn't, as in 60% he does come back. I'd say it's probably at that level, but there's still a huge chance that he doesn't. So that's a real opportunity for a gutsy manager to take the risk, and if it pays off, you get yourself a top 40 guy at the value of someone outside the top 100, and that can be enough to really swing the league in your favor. So it's probably more of a win-now move if your team's sort of in that, you know, third to sixth range in a league. Making that sort of acquisition gets you into the top two, I would say, if it works out. Otherwise, you fall down and you drop down a couple of spots and sort of put yourself maybe more into rebuild mode. Dwayne Wade, talked about him a little bit before in terms of the contract. A real bounce back season from Dwayne Wade, just in terms of injuries. Yes, he was only the 96th ranked player in 9 cat leagues and 95th the year before. He was 66th in 8 cat and 46th the year before. So I wouldn't really call it a bounce back in per game values, but the fact that he was able to suit up in 88 games, including playoffs, is massive. He played 31 minutes a game, also massive. 19.4 points to lead the team. He hit 0.2 threes, and that's something I'll mention it now. He didn't hit any threes throughout the season at all, really, until he just got... Hey, he was Steph Curry all of a sudden in the playoffs. A really weird turn of events. Still hit those threes at only 28%, so not a good three-point shooter, obviously. But where Wade's ability is obviously his scoring, but 4.3 rebounds, 4.6 assists. As a shooting guard getting 4.6 assists, it is tremendously valuable. He had a steal a game and blocked 0.6 shots, also valuable. 46 and 79 as his percentages. Really, really good numbers from Wade. If we look at what he did previous seasons, like the last three seasons, he played 62, 54, 69, 49. That's the last four seasons. Those games, that's his game total. This year, 88 games. Yeah, big difference. He saw himself get almost the same assists as last year, grab some more rebounds, and block double the amount of shots as the season before without really losing any efficiency. So Wade, a really, really good season, but he's 34 years old. How much better do you think he can get? Well, he can't get better. He's never returning to peak Dwayne Wade. That's fair enough. But can he maintain this? Can he maintain a string of being non-injured? I think that there's always a concern with him with the knee, and then with the hamstring and the back and the migraines and all that sort of stuff. So it's very risky to even... You'd never consider him in the top 50. Never. He's a player that you pick in those late rounds, you know, probably around pick 80 pick 90, and in a dynasty, you look a bit later, because at 34 years of age, maybe he's got one to two more seasons of being a top 100 player. Maybe. Maybe it's just one. Maybe it's not even one. So Wade could be considered the guy who's due for a drop-off. He was fourth in the team in win shares, had a really nice win share per 48, solid offensively, solid defensively in terms of box score plus-minus numbers, a PER over 20 as well, the third player on this team with a PER over 20. But like a lot of these guys, he was a negative 5 on-off. So him and Bosch combined to be negative 7.5 if I add those numbers up, which I know is not how those numbers work, but negative 2.5 for Bosch, negative 5 for Dwayne Wade. And the interesting thing about this team, which I'm going to talk about, I might as well talk about it now, just the fit of Wade and Dragic doesn't allow Dragic to be his best. So I think that Wade, when he retires or when he really declines enough where he's not given the ball or he's not given the minutes, that's going to really allow Dragic to flourish. Because we saw the times that Wade would sit, how much better Dragic would look, or if Wade had to miss a game, which he didn't miss many, but if he missed a couple, the Dragic would really start to put together some huge sort of numbers. And those two don't coexist very well. And I don't think Dragic is happy with it. But at some point, he is going to have to assume the mantle of being the man on this team, and you'll see his fantasy numbers rise. Let's talk Goran Dragic now anyway. He had a 5.2 on-off, not a negative, but a positive. So out of all the starters, he was the guy that was really carrying the load there. But he saw his numbers dip, and we've seen big, big numbers in terms of his fantasy rankings drop in the last two seasons. From that last season in Phoenix, where he was a top 30 sort of player, he went down to 62 last year and 101 this year in 9-cat leagues. In 8-cat, it was a drop from 57 to 76, so big drop-offs there as well. And again, it's the Dwayne Wade factor, the Chris Bosh. I think him and Chris Bosh actually work really well, but the fact that when he plays with Wade, it's a real concern about how he uses the ball and how involved Dragic gets. Dragic played 86 games at 33 minutes, averaged 14.5 points and hit almost a 3, 4 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 0.2 steals, and shot 47 and 74 with a 32% 3-point percentage. Now, the 3-point percentage is not good, we're aware of that, but the last two seasons he was 35 and 41, so maybe it's a bit of an anomaly, but what he has been always is a really good field goal percentage guy. He did top 50% in the previous two seasons, so a dip to 47 is a bit of a dip, but 47 is still well above average for a starting point guard in the NBA. Now, Dragic was really, really putrid to start the season. He was a guy that I was recommending as somewhat of a buy low, and he did get better as the season progressed, but he never got back to being that player who was a top 30 guy in Phoenix. And he's just not going to do it while Wade is absorbing so much of the minutes or so much of the shots and so many of the ball distribution. He's just not going to be that guy. When Wade's got a usage of 32 and Dragic is only 22, it's going to have an impact on what he's able to do. Now, Dragic was still pretty high up there in win shares, boasted a decent box score plus minus, an above average PER, but not his greatest season. And I do think that he is due for a bounce back. At 76 in 8-cat leagues, he's a great pick if you can get him at pick 76 in a draft for an 8-category league. But I think that he has got the ability in a dynasty format to become a top 50 guy, maybe for only one more season, and it might take two seasons, but I do think that he can become that guy again. If we look at him, he is 30 years old, so that is somewhat of a concern, and that maybe tempers my expectations about whether he does get back to that top 50, but I do think he's got somewhat of an ability, and I think that next season, instead of being 76th, he's got a real chance to be 65th or around that mark. But a great late round point guard, as long as you're not expecting the world, as long as you're not expecting All-NBA Goran Dragic, I think you'll be pretty happy with what he can bring. Luol Deng, I thought Luol Deng was dead. I thought he was buried. He was when he was in Cleveland, and he was pretty piss poor when he was in Miami for most of the time, until Chris Bosh got injured, and then Deng moved across to the starting lineup and had a new lease of life. You couldn't own Luol Deng in a standard 10 or 12 team league before the Bosh illness. Once he moved across to power forward, you had to own him. Now, he was a negative 2.9 on off, so not a great number there. Full season 9-cat, 76th. Full season 8-cat, 98th. But the difference between pre and post All-Star is astounding. 119 pre, 46 post. It's a big jump, and that's the difference between playing with Bosch and playing without Bosch at the 4. So big numbers from Deng. If we have a look what he did over the course of the season, which I will do now. I'm just going to need to bring up something. The move to power forward really helped him. Now, overall, his numbers, he played 33 minutes a game and averaged 12.5 points. He hit 1.3 triples, had 6 boards, almost 2 assists, a steal, 46, 77, and 36. So really solid percentages. And he is probably a better rotisserie player than he is a head-to-head player. But the difference between him pre and post All-Star, pre-All-Star, 10.6 points. Post, 15.2. pre 4.7 rebounds, post 8.1, pre 1.5 assists, post 2.5. These are really, really big differences. Pre 43% from the field, post 48. Yeah, big difference. True shooting, pre 44, post 56. Pre usage 16, post 19. Pre plus minus 3.5, post 7.1. Yeah, he really, really took advantage of that new opportunity. Now, we don't know if A, Bosch is going to be back and they play Deng as a full-time power forward, or B, if Deng is even going to be on this team. So he's not someone who I'd be really, you know, that 46 post all-star looks great. And Luol Deng, let's pick him as a top 50 guy. And I would say no. No, that's not the case. I wouldn't even pick him in the top 100 in most situations, because it was a situation that took a lot of confluence of events for him to become that top 50, top 60 guy post all-star. And I just don't think at his age, given that what we've seen the last two seasons has been fairly putrid at age 31, not sure I can really recommend going that hard on Luol Deng. And I just don't think, barring another weird situation, that he's going to be a guy who has an opportunity to put up those sort of numbers. But say Bosch retires and Deng's brought back, maybe I consider it in an 8th round. Maybe I consider it in a 7th round. Maybe. But not all that super high on what Luol Deng can do for this team moving forward. He was the second on this team in win shares, had a really nice box score plus minus. I think he was third on the team in that metric. Yeah, he was third on the team in that metric. 55 true shooting, 15 PER, nice VORP at 2.3, which was second on the team. And some pretty decent numbers from Deng. And if we looked at them in terms of a split post All-Star, he'd be even higher in all those metrics. So he did have that great season, and it was great second half of the season. But overall, when you look at his overall production, he was worse than the year before. Yeah, he scored less points. He grabbed more rebounds, but shot a worse percentage. Wasn't quite as good. But overall, I think it's fair to say that the second half Deng that we saw is probably not something that's overly repeatable. Joe Johnson was putrid to start the season in Brooklyn. Really, really not good at all. But the numbers that he was shooting, like 33% for a chunk to start the season, it was not something that was going to continue. And he was doing everything else well. He was getting the shots. He was playing the minutes. He was getting the assists. He was getting the rebounds. And a lot of people were dropping him, and I could understand that. But he was a guy that I said, just grab him back, because I think that he's going to end up being maybe a top 90 sort of player. And he did really start to improve, especially when Jarrett Jack went down. He started absorbing a lot more of the ball, more usage, more ball handling, more assists, and started looking pretty decent. If we look at his overall numbers for the season, a 5.6 on-off in Miami is really good. 154th, 9 cat, 118th, 8 cat, but a huge jump again when he joined Miami. 141 to 87 in 8 cat, that's a big jump. 9 cat, 175 to 100. He really took off when he hit Miami. If you look at his total season numbers, they're okay, but let's look at what he did in terms of a split between the two places. He averaged 13.4 points in Miami versus 11.8. He averaged actually less assists, 3.6 versus 4.1 in Miami. Less rebounds, 2.8 versus 3.9. But what he did do is he shot 57% on his two-point shots. He shot 42% on his three-point shots and had a 58% field goal percentage versus a 41% field goal percentage in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, he's not surrounded by as much talent. He was taking some bad shots, some ill-advised shots, some hero shots. In Miami, he played within the system of the team. He played 2 minutes less per game and was a lot more efficient. And 42% shooting, that's up there as the second-best three-point shooting season in Joe Johnson's career. Not that he did it for the whole season, but that little stint in Miami versus when he did it in 2004-05 for Phoenix, when he shot a ridiculous 48% from the three-point line. Overall, yeah, pretty decent season for Joe Johnson, but given we don't know where he's going to end up, and he's most likely going to see a role under 30 minutes wherever he goes, I'm pretty sure he's not going to be a guy I'm overly interested in your standard formats, or really having him in that anywhere near that top 100 or even top 120 range for next season. But he was key for this team. He almost got them over the hump in that series against, not him, but the team in general, in an injury-plagued roster, over the hump in Toronto. So pretty interesting stuff. But again, just one of the many pieces that this Miami team has to deal with heading into the offseason. Tyler Johnson battled shoulder injuries. He did come back towards the end at the playoffs, But overall, you know, season was marred by injuries. When the Heat traded Mario Chalmers, it was so that they could give more minutes to Tyler Johnson and to my boy Joshy Richardson. And Johnson didn't really get a chance to step up, although Richardson was obviously superb. Johnson had a negative 1.7 on off. He was 175th in 9-cat leagues, which I think a lot of people would be surprised he was that high, and 178th in 8-cat leagues. And he was a guy that I was very impressed with. He plays the point, he plays the two, he played 23 minutes a game, 8.2 points, 0.7 threes, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.6 steals, 49 and 79, shooting 40% from three. That is super efficient stuff from Tyler Johnson, and I do think that he is going to have a really significant role in the next couple of years, because, as I mentioned, Dragic, yeah, look, he's 30, so maybe they decide that when he gets to 32 that Johnson really starts to take over. But even in a role where he plays 24 minutes a night as a backup 1-2, I think that he can really be a guy who threatens for 16-team leagues and probably even threatens for 14-team leagues. In terms of what he did advance number-wise, he was a positive in box score plus-minus, both offensive and defense. He was an above-average win shares guy. He was a key contributor and shot 58% true shooting, which is obviously a great number. If you don't know about true shooting, 56 is considered about average. So to shoot 58% as a point guard is a huge number for a guy like Johnson, who played a significant amount of minutes, not a huge amount, but still more minutes than what Joe Johnson did in a Miami Heat uniform. So a pretty decent season from Tyler Johnson. He's a guy that you're probably in a 12-team dynasty, you're not investing, and let's see what happens in the next 3 years, because I'm not sure his ceiling is top 50 or anything like that. But if your league is deeper, if you're in a 20-teamer, if you're in a 30-teamer, he's really got a chance to become a top 120 player within the next 2 to 3 seasons, I think. Justice Winslow, the man who did close to the most, let's try that again, the man who did close to the least with the most this season, and a guy that played tremendous minutes on a playoff team but didn't put up the stats, and it didn't excite us from a fantasy point of view. Yeah, on off, 3.7, really, really positive. Better than Bosch, better than Wade, better than Whiteside, better than Tyler Johnson, better than Deng. Great numbers. But 227th in 9-cat leagues, 219th in 8-cat leagues. That's not all that impressive, is it? But still, he played a total of 91 games for the season. He averaged 28 minutes a game, just 6.5 points and 0.4 triples, 5 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 0.8 steals, 43, 69, and 28. And that's where the concern is. But we know what rookies do in terms of their percentages. We know that we could see a 10-12% jump in one of those categories next season. I don't think that's... It is maybe a little bit stupid. No, it's not, because players do it. And players do have big jumps in their shooting percentage heading into their second season, and then hitting into their third season as well. So it wouldn't be a surprise to see those shooting numbers really take off for Justice Winslow. And if we just look at what he did pre and post All-Star, it's a jump. He shot 33 from 3 instead of 26. He shot 43 instead of 42 from the field. And it's not a big jump, but it's big enough. He played more minutes as well post All-Star. He scored more points, had more rebounds, and had a better plus-minus throughout that time frame as well. And I think that that's something that's, he almost had as many steals in the 28 games post All-Star than he did in the 50 that he played pre-All-Star. So to me, that's some pretty impressive numbers from Justice Winslow. Now, what does he project as a fantasy guy? Well, I said he was ranked 227th this season. That's not intriguing, you 12-team league guys. Will he be a 12-team league guy next season? Well, there's a huge possibility that they just don't bring Luol Deng back, because they go, well, you know what, Justice Winslow's there, man. He played center in games during the playoffs. He can play the four, he can play the three. So maybe they don't spend that money on Deng and just go, you know what, Winslow's ready, let's bring him out there. But his offensive game needs a lot of work. Where can he be? Is he a guy that you would take in your last 2 or 3 rounds of a standard league draft? I don't love it, but I also don't hate it, because there is a chance he takes a big step forward, especially if Deng isn't there. So that's something that you could consider. He was a massive 1.6 in defensive box score plus minus as a rookie, and that is a huge, huge number. Yes, he was a negative 2.2 offensively. He was a negative 0.2 offensive win shares, but his defense carried his numbers so much that he was a key factor. Now, a PER of 8.4, not ideal. A true shooting of 49, also pretty piss poor. But there's a lot that he can work on and get. If he gets those shooting percentages up, which he was a pretty good shooter at Duke in college, that can come together. You get those shooting percentages up from what they were, which, let's look at him again. Yeah, 43 from the field. Could he be a 46 guy next season? That's not stupid. 69 from the free throw line, he could be a 75 guy. 28 from three. Why can't he be a 33% shooter? And then that adds to the 6.5 points, and he averages 11 points, 10 points. He gets 1.5 triples. And then, you know, the 5.1 rebounds is a good number. Maybe he gets more of those. You would think that the steal numbers should get over one. Probably that's more of a third-year thing, but that's something that can come as well. I think the Winslow definitely has top 70 upside. Does he have higher than that? I'm not sure his offense really allows that, but he still could become so good at rebounding, defense, and his ability to put up, you know, nice percentages, which I think, again, can improve, and hit some threes. That I think that he's a real chance to become a top 50 guy at some point in the future. So he is a guy that you should be attacking pretty aggressively in dynasties if you're willing to wait a couple of seasons. I imagine he does take a big leap next year, and we won't see him at 227. It's a possibility we see him at 127, but then we might see him at 80 or 90 the next year, and then with a real chance to jump up. So I do think that his game is going to improve in leaps and bounds. To have such an impact and be such a contributor this season is key to me, and he is a guy that I'm really excited to see what he can bring once he gets going. But it's probably going to be two to three seasons away, I would imagine, before he becomes a real legitimate, reliable fantasy option. Briante Weber, not much to really talk about with Weber. He played 9 games for the season, 19 minutes, 3.4 points, but a lot of these minutes came while he was a member of the Grizzlies. Not a huge amount to really like. The Heat do like him, though. Whether they bring him back remains to be seen. I don't think there's much hope for him in terms of long-term dynasty future or anything like that, so I wouldn't be getting overly interested in what Briante Weber brings. He was a plus 74.7 in Miami, so that's obviously a massive number, but he did play just one game with 3 minutes, so it's obviously a skewed number. And he's 39.3 PER, same thing. So don't read too much into looking at what Briante Weber did over the course of the season, and he's more of a deep league guy. He'll be the third point guard on this team if he does return, which we imagine that he will. But they play Josh Richardson at the point. There's Tyler Johnson, there's Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade handles the ball as well. Not a huge amount to like with Weber. Amari Stoudemire was really great when he had to fill in for Hassan Whiteside when he got injured, and then continued to start for a chunk of time. But we know that the game has sort of passed Stoudemire by. He was a negative 1.6 on off. He ranked 215th in 9-cat and 239th in 8-cat, which is really, it's really impressive, to be honest, given he only played 14 minutes a game, well, less than 14 minutes. He almost grabbed you 4 rebounds in those 14 minutes, so that's great. 5.5 points, 0.7 blocks, 0.4 steals, 77%. So if he was playing 30 minutes a night, he would be a top 100 player. I don't have any doubt of that, but he physically can't do it. Even when he was getting 20 minutes a night, you had to consider him for 14-team leagues, definitely, and even 12-team leagues under certain situations. But at his age, as an unrestricted free agent, what does the future hold for Amari Stoudemire? He would look to catch on as that third big, or not even third big, fourth big maybe, on a team. And we all know that there's not much happening for him in terms of getting better than this, or really even being able to stomach more than 14 minutes a night, which is what he played last season. On to my boy, Joshy Richardson. He had a second round draft choice. I was really, really interested in him preseason. He had an on-off number of 1, so a pretty good number there, and an overall 9-cat ranking of 207th. Yep. Pre-All-Star, he was the 404th ranked player. Post, he was 94th. He was tremendous. He played 66 games at 23 minutes a pop. He averaged 6.6 points. Nothing here looks really exciting, does it? But 1.1 triples on 44%. He just kept shooting the three ball at a ridiculous rate. He shot 43% from the field. He had 2.4 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 0.6 steals, 0.6 blocks as well. And he looked like a player. And I am convinced that when they drafted him, they thought to themselves, I think that he can replace Dwayne Wade 2-3 years down the track. I'm convinced they thought that he could be that guy, and I thought that he could be that guy as well. And I am really, really into Joshy Richardson. Does he shoot 44% from three every season? Seems unlikely. He went through the hottest of hot streaks that lasted like 3 months. He was also almost unable to play during the playoffs due to he was just getting toasted. And that's fair enough. He is a young player. He is a rookie. But I think Richardson, you know, should be able to be, probably not next season, but if you're investing for the future, you're going to need to wait until Wade goes, because yeah, obviously that's the role there. But he still played 23 minutes a night with Wade playing a lot of this season, and was a real key part of their rotation, especially when they narrowed their rotation down, and he was playing 28 minutes or so a night for big chunks and being a key scorer. His ability to block shots as a shooting guard is very Wade-esque as well. There's a chance that he's a triple one type of player. He can handle the ball. He can be a point guard. It's going to be real tough to try and acquire him, though, in Dynasty, given the way he ended the season. But if you really want to focus the other owner on what he did in the playoffs, maybe you can get him at a bargain. I don't think that he's a top 150 guy next season. I think that's a stretch. I think you might actually see some regression in his game next season. But you want to be looking 2-3 years down the track from Richardson, and that's when I really do think that he can become a top 70, maybe even top 60 player. That, to me, is what he can do as an upside. But it is a fair way away, and I would not be expecting it next season. I think that it'll be a struggle for him to repeat the shooting feats of this season and even to get the same amount of minutes when Tyler Johnson's back into the mix. But again, there's so many options of what they can do in free agency, so maybe Johnson's not back in the mix. Maybe Wade's not back. Maybe Deng's not back. We've all got to see how that pans out, but Richardson, just the Heat really love him, that they love him a lot. They think there's a lot of potential, and he is a guy that I think is being groomed to be an eventual replacement for Dwayne Wade down the track. So just keep that chunk of information under your hat, and we'll see how it pans out. Gerald Green, great if you're playing in a real salary cap league, because you have to pay less than $1 million for him. His season wasn't ideal. He started off with that weird situation where he basically lost his shit at home and had to be hospitalized for whatever reason. The details are still a little bit sketchy, but basically didn't play for personal reasons, got suspended by the team for his personal conduct, but ended up playing 21 minutes a night and hitting 1.1 threes in his 8 points, getting 2.2 rebounds and half a steal. But at 39% shooting, 32 from three and 78 from the line, nothing is all that interesting about what Gerald Green did this season. And he is another one of those guys that I mentioned as being a free agent. Not sure he provided a huge amount of interest for this team. Really poor advanced numbers as well. Poor defender. And he should be way behind a guy like Josh Richardson on the pecking order. Now, I didn't touch on Richardson's advanced numbers, but they were pretty good. 57 true shooting. He had a positive defensive box score plus minus and a positive offensive. Above average win shares, 2.5 in the total win shares column. Yeah, overall, pretty good numbers. He was a real key positive figure for this team. And at 22 years of age, he's got a lot of room to grow. Gerald Green, on the other hand, I think we might be seeing the end of Gerald Green. I don't think he plays 20 minutes a game next season. Josh McRoberts was really great in Charlotte 2 seasons ago. Came to Miami, the injury bug bit pretty badly, and his play also dropped off significantly. He was a guy that, he was a must-own player in 9-cat leagues back in Charlotte, and even in 8-cat leagues without many people really realizing it. And he has just fallen off completely. He played only 14 minutes a game this season, 3.6 points, 2.5 rebounds, hitting 0.2 triples, and shot just 39% from the field and 21 from three. The fall off from Richardson, the injury has been, the knee concerns have been a real worry for him. He's 29 years old, he's signed for 2 more seasons, so he's still going to be around playing that backup role, but there is no chance to me that he retains Charlotte value. Maybe he comes in and be a guy that you can add sporadically across 12-team leagues, but even then, it feels a little bit, look, he had like one game this season where he put up big numbers and then he died off completely. Nothing really to love about what we look at with Josh Richardson, not Josh Richardson, at Joshie McRoberts at this point. Your negative box score plus minus numbers, you're really below average win share numbers, you're below 10 in the PER, 45 true shooting. He has just dropped off significantly, and it feels like this knee injury this guy is something that it's just never going to get better from, and it might even force him into an early retirement at some point. Again, 2 years left, but after that, I don't really see him being able to play anywhere, or anyone really wanting to sign him, unfortunately. Speaking of a player who can't really play, Udonis Haslem is 35 years old and he's still signed on with the Miami Heat. He's ranked 420th in 9-cat leagues and 434th in 8-cat leagues. I mentioned at the start he is an unrestricted free agent, but as long as he's going to continue to play, which it might not be, they might say, look, Udonis, we're just going to give you a front office job, we're going to give you a coaching job, and stick around this team, but they might not want him on the roster because, honestly, he didn't do a huge amount. He had a couple of interesting games, but 46 games at almost 8 minutes, 1.7 points and 2.3 rebounds, 41 and 74%. They're really not good numbers at all. And what does Udonis Haslem bring at this point? He's a big negative offensively. He does nothing there, can't shoot, can't pass. Defensively, he's okay, but can't protect the rim. Nothing to really like about Udonis Haslem, and if your league is relying upon you having Udonis Haslem in the lineup, well, your team is screwed and your league is like 800 players deep, even though there are only about 470 guys that suited up last season. That is the Miami Heat done. Now, we didn't have many questions come in for this one, so I'm not really sure why, but we do have one question from Rob Percher that I've seen come in as we've been recorded. He says, any thoughts about Bosch as a good pick for leagues that aren't redraft? I don't think he is worth where he will go in drafts. Now, Rob, what do you mean? Do you mean that you don't think that he is worth it in terms of he will be overdrafted or he'll be underdrafted? I reckon you're going to be able to get Bosch outside the top 75 in redraft leagues, and I gave my thoughts on what to do with him in Dynasty, because there is obviously a huge risk with acquiring him in Dynasty, and you might even find him fall outside the top 100 just because you might get one season out of it. You might get half a season. Who knows at this point? The question that we did have comes from Joseph Diffenbach. He says, Dragic and Bosch, a bounce back? Bosch doesn't need a bounce back. He was a top 35 player. He needs to be healthy. That's a different story than bouncing back with his play, and that's still up in the air. Dragic, yeah, I think he's better, but I don't think he is bounced all the way back until Wade's skill level falls off, that even he admits it, and he doesn't handle the ball as much. Your boy, Jay Rich, this, not Jay Rich, come on, Joseph, it's Joshy Richardson. Joshy Rich, you can call him Joshy. Is your boy Joshy the starter next season? No, not at this point. But that's assuming everyone comes back. No Wade, no Deng, then maybe we see a Richardson-Winslow 2-3 combination. I just don't see where he starts otherwise, because you're going to play Dragic and Wade. He's not starting ahead of Dragic and Wade. Winslow would get the upper hand for the three. If Deng's not there, he won't start. But a couple of moves might be made, and then we might see Joshy Richardson as a starter. But he, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, tremendous potential for Joshy. That's it, guys. We are done for today's podcast. The next one will be the Los Angeles Clippers. Remember, this is the last day to get in applications for the second Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League. You would have seen, if you haven't, go check it out. 5-minute video of the draft lottery drawing process that I put up here on YouTube. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Check out basketballmonster.com and, of course, fantrax.com to host your leagues. Hardwood Paroxysm for articles and podcasts. Hey, we're done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.